Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Crisis Next Door, a weekly report on the biggest conflicts around the world. With host Jason Brooks.
Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. The drums of war have been beating louder, with the U.S. sending a carrier group to the Persian Gulf after National Security Advisor John Bolton warned of indications that Iran is threatening U.S. forces in the region. Joining The Crisis Next Door to talk about the showdown is Ali Reza Nader, founder and CEO of New Iran, a Washington, D.C. think tank dedicated to research and analysis of Iran. Ali, thank you for joining The Crisis Next Door.
Thank you for having me.
The U.S. is ordering its embassy staff to leave Iraq due to potential threats from Iran's proxies in the country, and Germany and the Netherlands have suspended their military training missions to Iraq as well. Is this a signal of what's about to happen?
Not necessarily. I don't think that either side really wants war. And both sides have been very clear about this. U.S. senior officials have said they don't want an armed conflict. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said the same. But I think the key issue is that the regime in Iran is deeply worried about the cutoff in oil exports. Because of U.S. sanctions, Iran is not able to sell its oil. And there are fears among the regime elite of internal instability. So I think what we see here is the regime in Iran trying to really scare the world and raise the ante and send a warning to the United States not to ramp up its maximum pressure campaign against Iran.
We're seeing all of these warnings. Is Tehran ordering its proxies in Iraq and elsewhere in the Middle East to give indicators that they could be up to something in order to, you know, push the U.S. to pull back from this escalating tension in the region? Or is perhaps the U.S. looking at these various groups and feeling that there's fear in their eyes and that's forcing them to react? Where is all of this coming from?
Well, we've already seen the Islamic Republic's allies attack U.S. ally targets. For example, the Houthis in Yemen, who are armed and trained by Iran, sent drones into Saudi Arabia and attacked Saudi energy infrastructure. So Iran has already ordered its proxies, if you will, to conduct attacks. And interestingly, Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Quds Force, who's responsible for really Iran's policies in the Middle East, especially in Iraq and Syria, had traveled to Iraq a few days before the warning came. So I think the U.S. government is being pretty cautious. I don't see what the Trump administration is doing as being bellicose necessarily. I'm much more worried about what the Iranian regime does now that it is under tremendous pressure. And I think that's the story most of the media is missing, frankly, that there has been deep internal instability in Iran for the past year and a half, including really demonstrations every day. And the regime is worried that it might be toppled because of not just internal instability, but also U.S. pressure as well.
There have certainly been plenty of media critics who say the media is helping fan the flames of war by making more out of the U.S. carrier movement into the Gulf than should be made. What do you think of that? Are we really looking at the wrong angles here in that we should be focused more on the internal dissension in Iran?
Yes, I think this is not like the run-up to the Iraq war, and that's the comparison that's being made these days. And I think it's very incorrect, actually. I think the U.S. strategy toward the Islamic Republic is not focused on military conflict. There's a deterrence aspect, and I think this is what the U.S. is trying to do by beefing up its forces in the Persian Gulf. It's trying to deter Iran's military action in the face of pressure. But I think the media has been alarmist. Not all of the media, but quite a few media outlets have been very alarmist. And I think part of the problem is that the media isn't covering what's happening inside Iran. That's lack of access. But also, I think just today's partisan politics don't allow a good portion of the media to examine what's happening in Iran because of the media's opposition to Trump. So I think in the next few months, we'll see more instability in Iran. And, you know, events will could lead us to a point where the media will have to pay attention.
How strong is the opposition in Iran? It was only a decade ago that the Green Revolution was underway, and there were thoughts that the regime would be overthrown. Of course, that did not materialize.
Well, I think the opposition is really 80 million people strong, potentially, and that's the population of Iran. I think the vast majority of Iranians are opposed to this regime and want to get rid of it. The atmosphere in Iran has been described to me by several people as being seethingly angry against the regime. Just 2 days ago, there were student demonstrations in Tehran and quite sizable demonstrations against the compulsory hijab. I think the key difference between now and 2009 is that in 2009, people still hoped that this regime could somehow be reformed or could moderate itself. But after 10 years, people in Iran see that nothing has changed. But in fact, everything has gotten much, much worse under President Rouhani. And Iranians blame him and the regime for it. So I think this time around, there is a movement to get rid of the Islamic Republic. Now, how organized is it? It's hard to tell because you can't be public in Iran and be part of an armed, organized opposition group. If you're part of an organized opposition group, the state will come after you. But I do think I've seen indications that there are several different groups driven by different objectives, whether it's to get rid of the compulsory hijab or bring back Reza Pahlavi, the crown prince of Iran. There are indications that the regime is worried about these opposition trends.
It's hard to imagine a bloodless regime change in Iran. Do you think that the opposition or people that are opposed to the regime understand that and would welcome what that would entail?
So thus far, the civil disobedience movement in Iran has been very peaceful. It's the regime and its security forces that have resorted to violence. And I think most Iranians understand how devastating revolutions can be given their experience in 1979. So civil disobedience, mass protests, those are, I think, the ideal outcomes of change in Iran, or the ideal vehicles for change in Iran. But this regime is zealous and it's very violent. So I don't expect it to just sit back and give in to pressure. And we've seen that not just inside Iran, but regionally. You know, I suspect the Gaza conflict may have been actually ordered from Tehran. And then we've seen the attacks in the Persian Gulf. So while this regime is not irrational, it is willing to use violence and force both internally and externally to stay in power.
Iran has a deep network across Iraq and Syria. And while the U.S. could assemble overwhelming firepower, how much of a problem are those proxies for the U.S. and its allies?
They could inflict significant damage, but I don't think Iran is really in a good position to wage a major conflict right now. Its economy is collapsing. Its ability to fund its security forces and its military are reported to have decreased. There are reports that rank and file members are not getting their salaries, for example. And even funding to proxies like Hezbollah is drying up. Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, recently asked his followers to donate money to him. And even maybe 2 years ago, he was bragging that they were just doing great financially. So the Islamic Republic is under a lot of strain right now. It doesn't mean it's not dangerous. And it could inflict damage on U.S. troops. I don't think a war would be necessarily a cakewalk. But also, conventionally, it's a very inferior force. I mean, if you take the U.S. Air Force combined with the allied air forces in the Persian Gulf, the Iranian Air Force can't come close to matching it.
You're listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks, and we're talking about the showdown in the Persian Gulf with Ali Reza Nader, founder and CEO of New Iran, a Washington, D.C. think tank dedicated to research and analysis of Iran. The U.S. has classified Iran's Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization, accusing it of being the blunt instrument of Iranian-sponsored terrorism around the world. It's a move the U.S. has never made against another nation's military. How does this impact the Revolutionary Guard as it deals with Shiite militias and political parties in Iraq and elsewhere?
I think in the short term, it will hurt Iran's economy quite a bit because the Revolutionary Guards are so entangled with the economy that any company wishing to do business with Iran or Iranian entities has to really spend a lot of time on due diligence trying to figure out if a particular partner is affiliated with the Revolutionary Guard. So I think that gives the U.S. a lot of leverage. It makes, I think, engagement more difficult between Iran and the United States in the short term, as long as this regime is around anyhow. And I think symbolically sends a message to the Revolutionary Guards that the U.S. is serious about targeting them. Not necessarily just kinetically, but financially in terms of their reputation. So it's this powerful psychological weapon, and it has very practical economic effects as well.
Does the classification of the Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization affect its relationship with the Shiite militias and political parties in Iraq?
I think, if anything, it might make it easier to go after those groups for the U.S. Treasury. But those groups are all under a lot of financial stress as well. I think they're going to come under even greater stress. If you look at Hezbollah, for example, if I was leading Hezbollah, I would be very concerned about the potential collapse of the Islamic Republic, because if the regime in Iran collapses, then Hezbollah becomes isolated. So these proxies have a vested interest in preserving this regime. And interestingly, when Iran experienced floods a few weeks ago in the southwest part of the country, thousands of foreign fighters allied to Iran were shipped to southwestern Iran to keep order from Hezbollah and the Iraqi Shia militias, the Hashd al-Shaabi. So you can see the very close, almost symbiotic relationship between Iran and its proxies, and how hurting one really can damage the other as well.
And you mentioned the relationship of the Houthis. They are Iranian-backed in Yemen, fighting Saudi Arabia. How big of a factor is the Saudi-Iranian rivalry in this showdown between the U.S. and Iran?
It's a huge factor. The Saudis are being targeted because they have enabled the U.S. maximum pressure strategy to be successful. And they've ramped up oil production to replace Iranian oil on the world market, along with the UAE. And that has kept prices stable, as Iranian oil has. Its exports have decreased. So in addition to all the political and religious and ideological differences between the two, what Saudi Arabia is doing right now in terms of economically squeezing Iran, I think puts it in Iran's crosshairs. And that's why we see the Houthi attacks against Saudi Arabia. Of course, it's much more complicated. You know, the Saudis have been involved in Yemen in a very disastrous war for several years now. But when you look at any conflict in the Middle East, usually the Saudi-Iranian rivalry is one of the motivating factors.
You've also got the Israeli-Iranian rivalry, and Benjamin Netanyahu obviously in favor of the U.S. ramping up this escalatory tension in the Persian Gulf. Do you think that Israel and Saudi Arabia would not mind to see the U.S. finally make its move on Iran and force regime change?
I think in a lot of ways that's what's happening in the Middle East right now as the Iranian regime gets squeezed. I don't think that Israel or Saudi Arabia would necessarily would want a military conflict because why not deal with the Islamic Republic through economic and information and diplomatic means rather than get into a military conflict? I think what really worries the Israelis is Hezbollah and the various Iranian proxies on Israel's northern border. I think a conflict between Hezbollah and Israel could potentially, you know, the possibility of it could increase if the regime in Iran gets desperate and sees that its actions elsewhere are not working. But in the Persian Gulf, I don't think the Israelis are particularly focused on the Persian Gulf so much as their northern border.
And you mentioned Iran's economy and the struggles with it. GDP expected to fall 6% this year, according to the International Monetary Fund. The rial, the currency, has lost 50% of its value since the U.S. reimposed sanctions. Inflation expected to rise this year after a big jump last year. If Tehran doesn't get economic help from Europe or China, how long can that regime last?
That's a great question. And it's hard to imagine the regime lasting without cash. Even I think if China keeps buying Iranian oil, Europe has already given up on its trade relations with Iran. European countries have anyhow. And I would expect that even India and China will greatly reduce, if not stop, their purchase of Iranian oil. And so the regime will be unable to pay millions of civil servants, teachers, all sorts of state employees, security forces. And I think a lot of those people are going to come into the streets and it's going to be very messy. The regime hopes that in 2020, a new U.S. president might change America's policies toward Iran and return to the JCPOA or the nuclear agreement. But I think that's just a sign of desperation. If that's their strategy, they know they're in big trouble.
Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei told his country on state television that there won't be war with the U.S., but he also maintained that Iran won't negotiate with the U.S. on a nuclear deal. This has all the hallmarks of a stalemate with both sides digging in. Is there anyone that can bring both sides to the negotiating table?
It's very hard to imagine the U.S. and Iran negotiating seriously in the remainder of the current Trump administration. I think given the U.S. leverage, the best policy the U.S. should pursue is to put even more pressure and really look for the next era of U.S.-Iran relations. If this regime's durability is in doubt, and I think it really is by everybody concerned, including members of the regime, then it makes sense for the U.S. to start thinking about what comes next and engage not the regime itself, but other Iranians, Iranian civil society, the democratic opposition. It's, I think, time to start thinking beyond this regime, because after 40 years, everything that's been tried hasn't worked. The U.S. has engaged Iran and vice versa. I think fundamentally, this is a very ideological regime, and the so-called moderates like Rouhani have proven to be completely ineffective and fake. And so eventually the U.S. and Iran will have to reconcile, but I don't see it happening under this current regime.
Do you think that there will be a risk in the escalatory moves that we've seen so far? Or do you believe that there will be a bit of a dialing back in the coming months as the U.S. pursues stricter sanctions against Iran?
My greatest worry is not intentional military conflict, but inadvertent escalation. And I think it's just easy for both sides to miscalculate. But there are the indications that both sides will dial down their military options. And saying this, though, I don't think necessarily we're going to see the end of heightened tensions, because at some point, Iran's oil exports are going to go down close to zero. And I think more people will come into the streets and the country will be destabilized. Because when we look at Iran outside of U.S. pressure, there's a lot going on to suggest that Iranians are done with this regime. I think there's a tendency for us to focus on U.S. policy, whereas there are things going on in Iran, like the fight against the compulsory hijab, that have very little to do with U.S. policy on sanctions. But we have millions of women fighting for their rights. And I think once more and more women in Iran, including, you know, huge numbers or crowds of women, stop wearing the mandatory hijab and Iranians stop abiding by the regime's unjust laws, then Iran will be heading for a change. And I see that every day on Iran's streets. It hasn't achieved critical mass, but I think it will sooner or later.
And the world will be closely watching for those developments. Ali, thank you very much for joining us here on The Crisis Next Door.
My pleasure.
We've been joined by Alireza Nader, founder and CEO of New Iran, a Washington, D.C. think tank dedicated to research and analysis of Iran. Thanks for listening to The Crisis Next Door. I'm Jason Brooks. Till next time.
The Crisis Next Door with host Jason Brooks is produced weekly.
If you have any thoughts for Jason, email him at tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com. Again, that's tcndpodcast@kcbsradio.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.